Countdown to Ultima, this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. Happy holidays, everyone. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Though officially still known as 2014 MU69, the New Horizons team will tell you that humanity is about to encounter Ultima Thule. The leader of that team, Alan Stern, returns to Planetary Radio to prepare us for a very special New Year's Eve out where the sun is barely more than just another star in the heavens. Then stay with us to hear what Bruce Betts has cooked up this time. No rubber asteroids just yet, but we've got a somewhat related new prize for the winner of the What's Up Space Trivia Contest. By the way, we've got more of everything, including a review of 2018's planetary exploration highlights from Emily Lakdawalla in the online edition of this week's episode. You'll find it at planetary.org/radio. 2014 MU69 or Ultima Thule, call it what you like. Its discovery in June of 2014 must have generated a sigh of relief from New Horizons principal investigator Alan Stern. This little world, so much farther from the sun than Pluto, would be within reach of the spacecraft that was then still speeding toward its historic 2015 encounter at Pluto. I just called it a little world, but Ultima is 1,000 times bigger than Comet 67P that was visited by Rosetta. We know it is either elongated or possibly two bodies near or even in contact with each other. We know it is reddish, and we know it takes nearly 300 years to make one orbit. And that's about it. At least until New Horizons rushes by. That will happen at 0533 UTC, or 1233 AM Eastern Time, on New Year's morning, 2019. I'll be at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Lab outside Baltimore, Maryland. That's where Alan and his team will be anxiously counting down to the flyby. New Horizons won't care if the U.S. federal government is still shut down on that morning, but you might, if you hope to follow the encounter. NASA TV will not provide live coverage unless Congress and the Trump administration have found a solution for the budget impasse. Alan told me APL will step in with its own live coverage, if it must. We talked on the morning of December 24th, just 7 days before the encounter. Alan, welcome back. I am so thrilled to be looking forward to joining you at the Applied Physics Lab in just a few more days for this absolutely amazing encounter with this object known as 2014 MU69, though I much prefer the name that you and your team have given it.
Ultima Thule?
Yes.
Yeah, we are so excited about this flyby and can't wait to have you here, and are just barreling towards New Year's Eve and New Year's Day with the close approach. It's going to be spectacular.
I can barely get over the fact that we didn't even know that this little world existed less than 5 years ago. What's the current status of the spacecraft and the mission?
Well, the spacecraft is on final approach. We've passed the point where we will make any more trajectory corrections. We are just spot on in terms of navigation. Spacecraft's very healthy. All the instruments are operating well. The command load instructs the spacecraft, the highly choreographed set of instructions for the entire flyby operation is not only up on the bird, burned into the flash memories of the two primary computers, it's already engaged. So we're already in the second day of the flyby operations.
Wow. Take us back to when New Horizons had its encounter with Pluto. It sounds like this one is a little bit less exciting in very good ways.
At first, I wasn't sure what you meant.
Yeah, I thought it might be a little confusing.
I think I got you. Yeah, we had a little 4th of July fireworks on the Pluto flyby when our main computer went offline and the spacecraft backup computer took over and cut off all communications with the Earth. And gave us a very intense 3-day homework assignment of putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. But, you know, we have a really spectacular mission operations and engineering team. This is the Apollo 13 of planetary exploration, what happened to us. And they rescued it. We're working round the clock for those 3 days. And we didn't miss one single close approach observation as a result of their spectacular save. This flyby so far has been going just perfectly by the textbook. We have not had any kind of problems, anything like that.
It really was a spectacular save. I mean, that's the right word for it. And it is so well documented in that book that you co-authored with David Grinspoon, Chasing New Horizons, that we've talked about previously on the show. So still recommending that book as a great read about this mission. But the mission continues. Take us back once again, though, even before that rescue, when you were still looking for a Kuiper Belt object to explore. It was quite an effort, wasn't it?
It really was. Let me start by giving some context to those who might not know it. The real reason that this mission was funded was because we were at the top of the 2003 decadal survey in terms of scientific priorities for planetary exploration. And the reason that happened was the discovery of the Kuiper Belt. And what the National Academy wrote in that decadal survey was that the discovery of the Kuiper Belt, this third zone of the solar system that has so many forensic clues to the origin of the planets, and which is dotted with other dwarf planets beyond Pluto, raised that priority. And as a result, when we proposed this mission and competed to win it, NASA required that all of the competing proposals build a spacecraft that was capable of not just flying to explore the Pluto system, but onward deeper into the Kuiper Belt to do Kuiper Belt flybys. Do just exactly what we're doing with Ultima Thule on New Year's Day 2019. So we're pretty excited. This is the capstone portion of the mission. We can talk a little bit more later about the fact that we hope to do one more Kuiper Belt object flyby still farther out in the 2020s. But this is the first look anyone has ever had up close at this kind of body. And we just can't wait to start getting the data back.
As I said, we didn't know it was there. You're coming up on the fifth anniversary of its discovery, which was quite a feat in itself. I mean, this thing has an apparent magnitude, I have read, of about 27, which for those who aren't familiar with those numbers, that's a very, very faint object. Was this a kind of a worldwide effort to find this target?
It really became that. We started searching using the largest ground-based telescopes in the world, like the Keck and Gemini South and others, Subaru in particular, back in 2011. And year after year after year, we were awarded observing time and searched with all those telescopes. And we found dozens of small Kuiper Belt objects along our flight path, but none were within our reach, within our fuel reach. And when things started getting desperate in late 2013, as it turned into 2014, I made the decision that we should apply to the Hubble. And we had to ask for a really significant amount of time, almost 200 orbits. But the Hubble awarded us that time, and that did the trick. Within a space of 2 weeks, the Hubble found three targets that we could reach, from which we selected Ultima.
What followed was, I think, yet another exquisite feat of navigation by your team to put you on course for Ultima Thule, right?
Well, that's right. We used the Hubble for the entire 4 years from the time we discovered Ultima in the summer of 2014 until August of this year when we could spot it with our own telescopes. Now, think about this. The Hubble was taking measurements of Ultima moving against the star field. From that, we could compute its orbit. And then we could compute the intercept engine burns that we had to do to get off the Pluto trajectory after Pluto and to intercept Ultima. But think about this. Here's this small body, 10,000 times less surface area than Pluto, about the size of greater New York City. Its reflectivity is about that of garden variety dirt. It is illuminated by a sun that is more than 2,000 times fainter than it is here on Earth, about the equivalent of moonlight. And the Hubble is capable of routinely spotting it and tracking it accurately. It's just amazing.
It sure is. As we speak, you're still a few days out. What have we learned at this point? I mean, it's still not much more than a point of light, right? And I'll remind folks that we're talking on December 24th, Christmas Eve.
That's right. We're about a week out. We're closing at almost a million miles per day. but Ultima is still just a dot in the distance. We won't resolve it until the day before the flyby, and we won't see it well until hours before the flyby. So far, all we know is that it doesn't have any distant satellites. We can't tell about the really, really close in ones that might be there. Same for rings. Doesn't have any distant rings, but it might have dust assemblages or rings in really close. We'll find that out in less than a week. But Ultima's been guarding her secrets pretty well. We expected by now to be able to see the periodic fluctuations in brightness as it rotates, but we still haven't been able to pin that down, and we're not sure why. It's not because the cameras aren't working. It's because there's something about Ultima or the Ultima system that is masking that signal, because we know from ground-based stellar occultations that painted out its silhouette, Ultima is not spherical. It has a very irregular shape, looks kind of like a contact or orbiting binary. So it should display a strong light curve, but we can't find it. And we're getting very close now, and we look at other Kuiper Belt objects with our cameras that are farther away, and they do show those light curves. It's a puzzle, but we're going to solve it next week.
That's Alan Stern of the Southwest Research Institute. He is the principal investigator for the New Horizons mission that is about to encounter 2014 MU69 or Ultima Thule. We'll continue our own encounter with Alan in a minute. This is Planetary Radio.
Hello, I'm Robert Picardo, Planetary Society board member and now the host of the Society's Planetary Post video newsletter. There's a new edition every month. We've already gone behind the scenes at JPL, partied at Yuri's Night, and visited with CEO Bill Nye. We've also got the month's top headlines from around the solar system. You can sign up at planetary.org/connect. When you do, you'll be among the first to see each new show. I hope you'll join us.
This is Casey Dreyer, the Director of Space Policy here at the Planetary Society. And you know that being a space advocate is important, if not critical, for the future of exploration. Well, we have something perfect for you. Space Advocacy 101 is a unique, free online training tool that teaches you how to be an expert space advocate for NASA. To learn more and to enroll for free in this course, go to courses.planetary.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan. By the time some of you hear this, the New Horizons spacecraft may have already flown within 3,500 kilometers, or 2,200 miles, of a Kuiper Belt object known officially as 2014 MU69, but called Ultima Thule by the New Horizons team and its leader, Alan Stern. New Horizons will be well over 40 times further from the Sun than Earth is when it flies by Ultima. That means it will take about 6 hours for its data and images to reach us. The probe must do all its work very precisely and very quickly, with no help from home. My colleague, Emily Lakdawala, she has created a really excellent guide to the encounter. It's a December 17th post to the Planetary Society blog, and we will link to it from this week's show page at planetary.org/radio, along with the excellent Applied Physics Lab New Horizons mission website. But can you give us just a very brief look ahead at the major events that are coming in the next barely a week?
Yeah, well, we are already using the cameras on board to study Ultima, even as a dot in the distance, to look for those light curve variations, which will eventually reveal themselves, to search for satellites. We do that almost every day now on final approach, same for rings. Beginning about a day before, we'll start making color measurements, and then we'll make spectroscopic measurements to both search for an atmosphere and determine what the surface of Ultima is made of. Meanwhile, our charged particle plasma sensors will be looking for interactions between Ultima and the solar heliosphere, and our dust instrument, which counts impacts on the spacecraft, we'll be looking for any direct signs of dust as we make the approach. And then as we get close in the last hours before closest approach, and then at closest approach, and as we make the initial exit from the system, we'll do all the high-resolution observations that will ultimately result in megapixel-class images, color images, resolve spectroscopy of the surface so we can see if the composition varies from place to place. We'll watch the sun and a couple of ultraviolet bright stars pass near Ultima to search for any gas absorption features in the ultraviolet spectrum that would reveal a coma or atmosphere around it. We're even going to map it in stereo, so we get a 3D stereoscopic topography map out of the flyby. And in the end, because we're going much closer than we went to Pluto, we'll have a much better surface resolution on the target. The images should just be spectacular. And from a scientific standpoint, I don't think that when we started this mission, we thought we would be able to do as well as what we've got planned. So we're pretty excited.
But we're going to have to wait a little bit beyond the encounter, right, to see those, the best of these images that are taken during the closest approach. And can you explain why that is?
Well, you're absolutely right, Matt. The day after the flyby on January 1st, the spacecraft will downlink an image that's 100 pixels across and about 10,000 pixels on the target. And within 48 hours after that, we'll have an image with 40,000 or so pixels on the target. But the megapixel class images won't be down until February. And here's why. As we pass by at 32,000 miles an hour, we have some uncertainty due to navigational challenges of having only discovered Ultima and tracked its orbit for 4 years, about 1% of the orbit period. As a result, we have to actually shoot several hundred images in rapid succession along a track, and Ultima will hopefully be somewhere along that track, but we don't know where. So we're bracketing, if you will. We're spatially bracketing where Ultima might be. And then from the lower resolution images that will come down just after flyby, we can mathematically predict which images in that track to go and get and downlink the high res of Ultima. But by the time we get those to the ground and do that work, and then you line all those things up and you count the fact that our spacecraft is going behind the sun January 4th, as seen from the Earth, cutting off communications for a period of time, it's going to stack up to be February before we get these, the really juiciest images on the ground.
Wow. It is a reminder of just how difficult, how complex a mission like this is. I mean, how long will it be before we get all of the data from New Horizons that it has collected during this brief encounter?
Well, it's going to be quite a while. The data sets from this flyby are going to be coming down every week for 20 months until August or September of 2020. You remember, Matt, for Pluto, it took us 16 months to get all the data back. We're taking just as much data. We're filling those solid state recorders with all kinds of different data types. And we'll prioritize them to get the most important stuff home first, in part because we want to write as action-packed and scientifically productive first papers as we can with the results. But also, that's an insurance policy against something bad happening where we couldn't get all the data. At least we've got the most important stuff first.
Perish the thought. Let's hope that things go as perfectly and as wondrously as they did at Pluto. You started to talk about New Horizons' future. I'll note that we only just a few days ago celebrated the passage of Voyager 2 beyond our solar system's heliopause, which put it in interstellar space, more or less. What is ahead for New Horizons?
Well, we're currently on a five-year first extended mission that lasts through 2021. Centerpiece is the flyby of Ultima, but it also includes context observations. We're making more than two dozen other Kuiper Belt objects near our flight path and heliospheric measurements that we make almost around the clock. And we'll do all that through 2021 and get all the data back. But in 2020, we're going to propose a new extended mission going out even farther. You know, the Kuiper Belt extends out 70 times as far from the sun as the Earth is. Ultima is only 44 times as far out as the Earth-sun distance. It'll actually be the late 2020s, in the year 2027 or 2028, before we leave the Kuiper Belt. And we want to be productive throughout that period, so we'll propose to continue Kuiper Belt studies and to look for new flyby targets. After all, there's no other spacecraft exploring the Kuiper Belt, and right now there's none being built to come after us. So this is our chance, and we want to really milk this mission for everything it's worth, and we have the power and fuel to fly on throughout that period and even longer.
I will say it again. I said it at the outset. I am absolutely thrilled to be joining you at the Applied Physics Lab there in Maryland when New Horizons has this encounter with Ultima Thule. Best of luck to you and the team, the greatest of success to all of you, and cannot wait to have this encounter.
Thank you, Matt. I'll pass that along and can't wait to see you here. We are so looking forward to New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, and hope that all your listeners will spend your New Year's with NASA and follow this incredible flyby.
I suspect a lot of them will be right there with us. We have been talking with the Associate Vice President at the Southwest Research Institute and Principal Investigator for the New Horizons mission, Alan Stern. He is also the co-author with David Grinspoon of that great book, Chasing New Horizons. And he and his team are about to experience a second encounter where no one has gone before at this little object they call Ultima Thule. It is time for the last What's Up segment of the year here on Planetary Radio. Bruce Betts is the chief scientist for the Planetary Society, and he is back as he is every show. Welcome. Tell us about the night sky and all that other great stuff you've got.
All right. Pre-dawn, you got Jupiter looking bright and Venus looking super bright over in the east before sunrise. And in the evening sky southwest, got Mars looking reddish. You can check out in the evening east, Orion is now fully up. And if you follow Orion's belt down towards the horizon in the evening, you will find Sirius, the brightest star in the sky, the night sky, that is. We've got a partial solar eclipse. You excited, Matt?
Always.
So then I guess you'll be road tripping to parts of Eastern Asia or the Northern Pacific Ocean.
I'm happy for them.
I am too. That's January 6th. And we've got a total lunar eclipse. We'll talk about that more later in the month. And then we've got the always hard to pronounce Quadrantids. See? Quadrantids meteor shower peaking on the night of January 3rd and 4th. The good news is there's no moon that night. It's new moon, basically. So it's good to view, and they can be good, but it's a pretty sharp peak, so you're pretty much looking mostly at that night, maybe a little bit day or day before, day after, but ideally the night of the 3rd and the 4th. Not as good as Geminids traditionally, but still a pretty good shower.
Did you get anything out of the Geminids?
Yes, a cold. Oh, actually, I already had it, which is why after telling everyone to go see it, I just lay around feeling miserable inside.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's a good time. But, you know, they'll be back. So maybe I'll try the Q shower.
A shower of Qs, yeah.
We move on to this week in space history. It was 1801 that Giuseppe Piazzi discovered Ceres, which was called a planet, and then an asteroid, and now a dwarf planet. And Don found really cool stuff at it. That was 1801. First asteroid discovered. We move on to random space bag.
A little trouble getting started there, I think. You might need a boost.
For you, Matt, I worked out a scale model. So New Horizons, at the time of its flybys. Well, let's start our tour with, we're going to put the sun in Los Angeles because, I don't know.
That's where it belongs.
We wouldn't even, the distance to Earth on this scale, we wouldn't even make it out of the LA megalopolis. We'd be roughly in San Bernardino for Earth. Jupiter, which it flew by many years ago, when it flew by there, it's kind of like the distance from LA to Las Vegas, or maybe just a little bit farther. And then Pluto in Chicago to within 10%, so LA to Chicago. And now 2014 MU69, LA to New York. LA, San Bernardino, it sounds like it could be a song. LA, San Bernardino, Las Vegas, Chicago, and now New Horizons, we'll get to New York.
Excellent. Whew. Yeah, that's a great comparison. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, we move on to the trivia contest. And I asked you, as seen from Earth, what extrasolar star has the largest apparent size? In other words, largest angular diameter as seen from Earth. How'd we do, Matt?
You threw a lot of people who were pretty sure that it was that famous star Betelgeuse, which a movie was not named after. But it is no longer. Apparently, it was at one time Betelgeuse, but is now something called R. Doradus. Do you have any information about this star?
I do, but I can't tell you about it. It's secret. No, it's not secret. Yes, Ardoratus, known also as HD29712, is the name of a red giant variable star in the constellation Dorado, which is in the far southern sky. Distance from Earth is 178-ish light years. So still kind of far, but it's so dang huge. How huge is it? Well, let me tell you, Matt. If it were placed at the center of our solar system, the orbit of Mars and most of the main asteroid belt would be contained within the star.
Oh, my. That's a big star.
my, that's a large star.
Phil Crane of Sacramento, California.
Yay.
He said it was Ardoratus, and that makes him our winner. So, Phil, congratulations. You got that copy of the National Geographic Space Atlas, Mapping the Universe and Beyond, and the National Geographic Almanac 2019, two beautiful books. That Space Atlas is really gorgeous, and you're going to want to leave it out so that you can impress people at your New Year's Eve party or whatever. But it is a great set of books from Nat Geo, and we thank them for providing these. And what's also worth mentioning is that we have yet another contest.
We do, and as a gift for the end of the year and new year, there will only be two choices, or at least only two good choices, to answer this question. In their current orbits, which object gets farther from the sun at some point in its orbit? Pluto or 2014 MU69? So not where they are now, but who gets farther away from the sun? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
You have until Wednesday, January 2nd at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us the answer to this one. And if you get that right and are chosen by random.org, we've got a 200-point itelescope.net account for you. By the way, we also have that for this week's winner, along with a Planetary Radio t-shirt from chopshopstore.com. But in addition this time, instead of a t-shirt from Chop Shop, you know, we worked with Chop Shop to create this great stuff, part of our Kick Asteroid campaign. If you go to chopshopstore.com, you'll see these. You can check in the Planetary Society store. We will send you all of these stickers, a logo sticker, three that are just really fun impact stickers, including at least one with a dinosaur, and a Stay Extinct sticker.
Stay Unextinct.
Stay Unextinct. He wrote it wrong on here. I read it. It's your fault, Thomas. A Stay Unextinct sticker.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about all the wonderful things you want to see in the night sky in the new year. Thank you. Good night. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, Bruce. He's Bruce Betts, the chief scientist for the Planetary Society, who joins us every week in this new year for What's Up. Many thanks to all of you who have joined us over the past year. We wish all of you the greatest of times in 2019. May all your personal explorations bring you closer to truth and joy. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its members who live on the final frontier. Mary Liz Bender is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan, Ad Astra.